Welcome to the Snow Fighters Institute podcast, coming from some of the most interesting people in the professional snow and ice management industry. To learn about their successes, to hear about the challenges they've faced along the way, and to have their perspective on critical issues facing our industry today. Before we get started, I'd like to invite you to follow our social media feeds and to check out our upcoming events at snowfightersinstitute.com. Please welcome your host, Phil Harwood.
Well, hey, everybody. I am really excited to have Gene Stork from Stork's Plows with me today. How you doing, Gene?
I'm doing good. Thanks, Phil.
We are sitting here in the second week of November, regardless of when you're listening to this. But I don't know what kind of weather you're having. I'm having a beautiful fall here, fall day in Michigan, where I'm at in Grand Rapids. But I'm really excited about this winter coming up. I'm hoping that we're actually going to get some snow this winter. I know some of our listeners didn't see much snow last year. What do you think, Gene? What's your, when you stick your finger out the window, what's your prognostication here?
I think we are too.
Yeah. I think we are too. You know, it always goes back to the average, right? That's what I always say. If you look at 30 years, 40 years, 50 years, 100 years, there's an average that we're always working back towards. So, you know, you can only not have snow for so long. If you normally have snow. But no, I'm really excited because for a lot of reasons. But so we're going to talk about your business. We're going to talk about Snow Fighters a little bit and Snow Alliance and some other really cool things. But people always want to know kind of who's behind the company. And so, you know, I'd love to have you just talk a little bit about Gene, about just, you know, who you are, introduce us to yourself and tell us maybe a little bit about your family, you know, what you do outside of work, maybe some of your hobbies. If you want to talk a little bit about, you know, where you went to school and stuff like that. And where are you located? You're in Pennsylvania, but what part? Pennsylvania's a huge state, right?
It is. Pennsylvania is huge. It's wide. We are just outside of Reading, which is about an hour west of Philadelphia. So we're not far from New York City, Philadelphia. We're a few hours from Pittsburgh.
Great. Well, I know I just listed a whole bunch of things there. Let's start with your family. Tell us about your family.
Okay. Yeah. So I've been married since 2006, and I've got a son that's 13 and two daughters, one that's 10 and one that's 8. We live in a barn. Right after we got married, my wife and I were looking for a property that wouldn't put us in debt for a long time. So we ended up buying a property that had a bare barn on it. But there was a well and a sewer there. So we spent the next 5 years digging out a basement and converting this barn into a house. And we lived right there on that property in a trailer. So it was a huge project. I did a lot, just about everything myself, and digging out the basement. We had our trailer, we ended up digging it under the trailer as well. So the trailer was sitting on I-beams. So there was a time we had to like walk across the boards to get into our house. And, you know, if you jumped at one end, it shook the dishes at the other end. But it turned out awesome, but it was a big challenge and a lot of fun to do it. So our kids have pretty much grown up in a construction site, but
wow.
By the time our second daughter was born, we moved into the barn shortly mm-hmm. after she was born. We still didn't have carpet and everything mounted, no trim, nothing painted, but it was enough that we could move into it. And then we pretty much finished all that up. So now years later, there's still some trim to do and things, but
of course,
it's always a project. But once you move in,
everything stops. Yeah. No, that's super cool. What a great experience to have, you know, with your family, to see your kids see that, you know, growing up in that environment and just the lesson. There's a lesson there, right? That's a life lesson.
Yes.
That they saw firsthand.
We live out in the woods. We've got no neighbors. We're up a long driveway. Everyone that comes up is always like, how do you plow this? And it's like, well, we can handle that. But
that's the easy part.
Yeah, it is in the trees and on the south side of the mountain. So my wife mm-hmm. doesn't always like sliding down the ice, but
right.
part of our adventure.
No, that's super cool. So when you're not building, converting a barn into a home, are you into hunting or what do you do outside of work?
I do hunt some, but unfortunately hunting is in the middle of our busy season.
Oh yeah.
So I probably get out a couple hours a year. I'll spend some Saturday afternoons during rifle season hunting and that's all I get. But I'm big into three wheelers. I've got a number of them and my son's got a dirt bike and a four wheeler. So we love to ride. I also have a number of Jeeps, so I love to off-road. I don't find much time to do that, but mostly I would say we love adventures as a family. We bought a bus a couple of years ago and converted it into a camper, and we drove to California and back, and I ended
like
up
like a school bus?
No, it's like it was a retirement home bus.
Oh, okay.
Like a C5500 front end.
Got it.
It was a 2007 with only 30 some thousand miles on it when I bought it. Got a steal on it. They were just upgrading their buses, and so we took a bunch of the seats out, put a table in there, put beds in there, and drove all over. So now we've had it up to Maine, down to Florida, out to California. We want to do Canada at some point, but you could just pull into a truck stop and sleep so we don't have to get hotels or anything. It's a little more in fuel, but it saves us a lot in hotels and all that stuff.
Yeah. No, that's fantastic. Great. So you grew up in a family business.
Yep.
And I want to talk about that, but I first want to hear a little bit about, well, I missed something because, you had, I was spending some time earlier today on your website and I saw something about New Tribes Bible School and I'd love to hear about that.
Yeah. So I graduated high school in 99 and, I had already been working in the family business since I was, about 7 years old. I started helping, but all through high school, all summer, I would work there and work after school. And I had no intention of ever leaving, really. I just was there and I did it and I enjoyed it. But I just started pursuing my relationship with God. And I was doing some Bible studies locally and some different things. But I had a strong desire to learn some more. I also had an interest in doing mission work. So I built myself a Jeep kind of thinking that somehow that would help me in the field. But I built a Jeep that was set up for just about anything, a snorkel, 9.5 inches of lift, just built it ready to go for that. And then started looking for schools and found a few that I was interested in and that I had already been out of school for 3 years. And, two of them felt I was too old because it was mainly for kids right out of high school. So then New Tribes took a lot of ages and they were basically it's training towards tribal missions. And there's three different levels of the schooling. I only did the Bible school. Mm-hmm. I did think I was going through all of it and going into the field. But I took a year off when I met my soon to be wife and, we ended up back here and I ended up just helping my parents cause kind of phasing part of the business out, but I just fell back in love with it and, never left. So we didn't plan on coming back to stay, but we ended up, we're still here.
Yeah. No, that's great background though. That's fantastic that you have that in your back pocket. I'm sure you learned some things there that'll apply to being a parent, being a business owner and involved in the community and all the above.
Yeah.
Well, I want to talk about your business. So tell us about Storix Plows.
Yeah. So I want to start from the beginning a little bit, how we got into the plow business. So, December of 79, my dad was currently working at a Jeep dealership. He was one of their, he was their top paid mechanic. He did Jeeps and Renaults, and he bought himself a snowplow in December of 79 and started plowing, getting some small contracts. Ended up within the next couple of years building a small fleet of plow Jeeps, and with the help of my mom and two of his friends, they were plowing 30 contracts. By the time about 1986, I know, was by then they had about 30 contracts. So we purchased our automotive business in 86, and the first winter he had tried doing the plowing and realized that to run both the business, and then he was the only one there at that point. So he was the only mechanic. He was answering the phone. He was writing the bills. So to leave and go plow snow didn't work. But I was basically raised in a plow vehicle in the winter. When I was you know, 2-3 years old, they would wrap me up and put me on the passenger's floor, and my sister as well. You know, we'd either each go with one of my parents or we'd both be with my mom, but they would be out plowing all day, all night with us, you know, not even in a car seat, but down, you know, on the floor or something. It was the early 80s, so it was fine. But
yeah, no one cared back then.
You know, and I remember, you know, 4 or 5 years old, you know, driving an old Wagoneer, and we're in a Friendly's parking lot plowing snow, and the Jeep shuts off, and, you know, my mom's there cranking it, and it's cranking slow, and we're like saying prayers so that we could, you know, we're in the middle of a snowstorm and she's trying to plow this parking lot. And then I remember the Jeep finally starting up, but just, you know, little memories of being in a plow truck, you know, tons of hours as a little kid. And so then in 86, we bought the shop, and it was geared towards automotive. We never sold our plows. We had them there, and over time we also had a car lot, so we were selling Jeeps we had. And, you know, if one came in, we might swap the plow around to have something we wanted a little better on another Jeep or whatever. And that's basically how it started. We just started selling Jeeps with used plows and flipping a plow here and there. And people would come in and say, hey, I see you got some plows, and we would sell them a plow. So then it wasn't until the mid 90s where we started stocking and selling new plow stuff. And from there it kind of blew up. It was slow for a long time, and we were slowly taking on lines from the early 2000s on. Snowway, Western, Myers, Fisher, we were just bringing in brands either as sub dealers or direct through those years. And then the online is what helped us really grow the business. And that started when I came back basically from Bible school. So around 2006, when I came back and started working for the business again, I was really pushing to sell stuff online. I had started selling on eBay about 2001. Mm-hmm. And in 2006, when I came back, my goal was to help thin the business out so that it was something more, a little more manageable without me there. But we ended up building the website, and it kind of blew up, and I fell in love with what I was doing. And the website has gotten us known all over. And mm-hmm. In 2015, we realized that we couldn't be doing the automotive side of things and the plow stuff, just because it's grown so much. And we have a month or 6 weeks worth of plow installs scheduled. And one of our automotive customers comes in and they say, I need an inspection and I need it done now. It runs out at the end of the month. And we're like, well, we're booked out 6 weeks.
Can't wait.
And we would squeeze them in because they've been a long time good customer. And it's like, how is this working? You know, we're pushing mm-hmm. off our good plow customers because we've got a good automotive customer. Like, these two things are conflicting. So we had a good winter in the 2014 to 2015 year. We did good, and we decided to give it a try and cut out the automotive. So we notified our regular customers, we rented out a restaurant and we took them all there and bought it.
Really?
And oh, that's let super them know cool. that we are shutting down the automotive business. And as of that day, we haven't done it. We've since 2015, we've been nothing but snow and ice equipment, just focused entirely on that year round.
Hmm. Wow. I don't know if I've ever heard of a company doing that to, you know, put all their customers, you know, take them out for a nice meal and update them on their business. And what a great way to say thank you for being a loyal customer. And we're no longer able to support you, but good luck.
Yeah. Well, so, yeah, people were disappointed because, you know, you hear sure. the stereotypes of mechanics and, you mm-hmm. know, how they're going to find another one. Right. But there were a few customers there that were actually original customers from 1986.
Wow.
And they had been bringing their cars to us all this time. So now they had to go find someone new.
Yeah. But what a great just stand up way to do that. Cause business changes. I mean, every business changes and that's a good thing. Change is good in business. You know, you see new things, you see new opportunities, you know, online didn't exist in 1986.
Nope.
So, you know, your new generation, new ideas, the world's changing. Your website says you have the largest and most diverse inventory in the world.
Yeah.
Inventory of what? Tell us about, help us understand. Some of our listeners don't know what Storks Plows is. So Storks, like a stork with an S on it, plows.com.
Yep. So
tell us what this huge inventory is.
Yeah. So we love everything snow and ice. Now we have our favorites. You can look on the website and know what brand we lead with. You know, we're huge Western fans, but besides that, we like snow equipment. So I don't care what brand it is, if it's something that's obsolete. I mean, we're into it because it's, for the snow industry. So, we not only do new plows, we still do the used plows. It started as used plows and we still do them to this day. So, I mean, we have, it's been a number of years since we counted, but I would guess about 1,500 used plows sitting
really?
Around, not more.
1,500?
Yep. And that would be pretty much every brand. You name it, we have had it or have it sitting somewhere. You know, old obsolete stuff. When other dealers are around the country are either cleaning out old inventory or going out of business, usually, a lot of times it leads to a email or phone call to us, and you know that's stuff we're into. So we'll buy old stuff, obsolete stuff, and you know either use it towards the used plows or you know have it when we have a customer that needs it. I mean, the old belt drive stuff, most plow places would want nothing to do with it or not barely remember it
for sure.
You know, and we still if we can acquire. An old dealership that had a room full of it, you know, we'll try to get it on the website. And we've got people all over the world that are looking for that stuff, you know, not like it's a big mover, but, you know, guys in Alaska or Canada or whatever that are still running a belt system, they're like super excited to be able to find something online to put their plow back together. And we love,
what's that? No, go ahead.
We love the new stuff. We love things that are constantly, you know, that the whole industry is constantly changing. Like every year there's brand new technology coming out. But we also love the old vintage stuff. I mean, I collect snowplow signs and posters and anything that was given to dealers over the years, stuff like that. So whenever I buy out a dealer, I always in my email, hey, do you got anything that was like a dealer advertisement thing, because I, you know, I love getting that stuff as well.
Yeah. No, that's great. Do you make any parts? Do you manufacture anything?
Yes. Not a lot in-house. I mean, there's a few things. We do have our own welding shop and paint shop and stuff and on a small scale. So yes, we do make a few things that either are no longer made or there was just a hole. There was a gap where no one seemed to ever make something for this. But more than that, we have suppliers that we would send something to. You know, here's something that they no longer make. Can you reproduce this for us? You know, we've got an amazing controller company we work with that, you know, builds us about 1,500 or more controllers a year. And we've got some features that others don't in our controllers. There's some lights we have custom modified to fit something that no one else has. There's just needs out there that, yeah, we try to fill that gap.
Cool. So I noticed on the website, there's an email subscription. If someone wants to get information, updates on the company, they could pop in their email, and I'm assuming they're getting some kind of newsletter. Is that right?
Yeah. So that would be our newsletter, which we really should be doing them through the winter, but honestly, we don't have time. Mm-hmm. So we probably send out 4 to 5 emails a year. It's you're going to be far better following us on social media.
Yeah.
We are on Facebook and Instagram and LinkedIn.
Mm-hmm. Very active.
Facebook would be the two we put the most posts on. The email is a good thing to sign up for, because there is some stuff we'll put on there that may not be on social media, but it's not something where you're going to get either a lot of emails or even a ton of information, just because we struggle to find the time to do it.
Yeah, good to know. And I'm assuming you can ship anywhere.
We do. We have a full shipping department. We got two guys just doing mail and UPS, and then we have another team that's doing our freights. You know, right now we're doing probably about 150 packages a day out of here and this time of year. But year round we're shipping. We try to ship orders whenever possible in the same day. Sometimes we're into a second day or third day if it's a hard order, but most orders are leaving the same day that you place an order on the website.
So what would you say to someone if they said, well, you know, I already have sources for my different parts and stuff. Why would I order it from some company in Pennsylvania?
So I would say what makes us stand out is, one, the fact that in the winter, all we do is snowplows. In the summer, all we do is snowplows. It's really something that almost no one else does. Most other plow places, plows are a sideline. If it's not their second, it's their third line of, you know, income. And for us, it's the only thing we do. We have a full team in the office. The only thing they know about is snowplows. You know, they study. All summer we are prepping like our information for the winter, updating things and looking at PDFs and matching up parts and everything. So for one, you know, that would be just that we know the products really well, because it's the only thing we're focused on. And if you've looked at our website and looked at the products, we try to go above and beyond anyone else's product descriptions, links to PDFs, measurements. You know, we want the customer to be able to look at the product on the website and know you're getting the right thing. Mm-hmm. Not buying something online with a fuzzy picture or whatever, and you get it and it's not anything like what you thought it was. You ordered the wrong part. I mean, that's a hassle for the buyer and the seller. So we try to describe stuff the best we possibly can for that. To jump back on that question a little bit, though, I would say if you have a great local dealer, do not take that for granted. There are not a lot of great dealers, and if you have one, I would definitely support them. What makes this industry great is the fact of the network of good dealers that are out there and how they work together and how we're able to support the industry through sharing information and sharing parts. So if you do not have a good local dealer, then please reach out to us. You know, if you have a good local dealer and they run out of something or it's back ordered and they can't get it, well, then that's an opportunity to reach out to us as well. We do have a lot of inventory, and almost on a daily basis, we are shipping to other dealers just because they can't get something, and we stocked enough of it and we have it. If you're far from a dealer or just don't have a good dealer around you at all, we would love the opportunity to work with you and see if we've got what you need. You can also use our website as a tool, even if you're not using us as your dealer. We do have a lot of information on our website, and we have a goal to improve the industry with that information. So if you need to use what's on there to make sure that your local dealer is getting you the right stuff, feel free to use our website for that information.
Storxplows.com. Check it out. I'm excited to come visit your place. You're in a new building. Tell us about that.
Yeah. So over the years in our old location, it was a little two-bay shop when we bought it. It had grown. We added a bay on it, and then we ended up buying the house next door only because it was being foreclosed on. But we over time needed that space. And then the neighbor on the other side, as we started to grow, sold their property. So we bought that. So it was actually five properties in the end. But there were multiple buildings, about 12 buildings that held our inventory. So if you came in the office to get a part, you know, you'd have to radio the parts guys and they'd be in a golf cart running from kind of building to building to get everything together for an order. And it was a slow, painful process. And it was that way for shipping. It was that way for walk-in customers. So 2 years ago, we were able to buy a 9.5-acre property with a 55,000 square foot building. So it's all under one roof.
Nice.
We have a really nice showroom up front and a parts department right there at the parts. You know, you walk in the door, you got a parts counter and all the small stuff is right there. It's basically kind of split up into three buildings. So the middle building, we have our conference area. We've got our skating rink, which currently isn't used much, but we do have a full skating rink because it was a family fun center. And then we have the shipping department. And then the back building is the warehouse where the bigger stuff is and the shop. So you can walk straight through all three from one to the next, but it is all one roof, which has really helped walk-in customers for sure. I mean, yesterday we had a guy walk in. He had a trade-in. He wanted a wiring kit. And, you know, we gave him a price on the trade-in. We looked up his wiring kit and the parts counter person, you know, went and grabbed their parts. And I had walked outside for 5 minutes and I was coming in and he was walking out with his parts, a paid bill, you know, total of like 10 minutes in the building.
Wow.
Which we just couldn't do that before.
Yeah.
And we know it was frustrating to our customers, but we were working with what we had and we, you know, it's what made us realize this change had to happen, which, you know, moving into the building's been extremely stressful. Our systems were broken for a bit. You know, you got to refigure out how to do things when you're in a new space.
Sure. Yeah.
And just the stress of now having the bills of the building and things. There's a few projects here that aren't done. Our front entryway is still ripped up, so people are coming in the back until that can get done. And, you know, it was a whole big mess with the township and sprinkler systems and stuff that we didn't plan on doing. So there was a lot of
growing pains. Yeah. Those were just growing pains.
It over the last month or so, it's been feeling really good. Just feeling the new flow and adjusting things as we go. And, you know, this week we implemented a new process. We created an area for local pickups. So when someone orders on the website, there's an area where everything goes, where before we didn't have a good place to store all that stuff. And that works. But, you know, this week we implemented a system where we tag them now with a number and, you know, they got a barcode on them. So someone walks in, we look at the order and it's like local pickup five. So we can radio that and local pickup five, you know, they can scan it and bring that whole order straight to the front.
Cool.
With almost no effort. So,
yeah. Well, I can't wait to see all this. So, you know, Snow Fighters is going to be at your facility this September.
We're very excited about
2024. The dates are September 11th and 12th. Actually, we just updated our website for our program lineup for 2024, and all the registrations are open. And, you know, Gene, you were at our event, our ops management event this September 2023, and we sold that. we sold that event out at 50 attendees and we turned away a whole bunch of people. You know, we certainly are going to pack your place to that level or maybe even more. We'll see how it goes. But, you know, I would say anyone who's interested in coming to check out your facility and being part of Snow Fighters Ops Management, it's September 11th and 12th. Our registration's open right now. I would say go ahead and reserve a seat because that event will sell out. It's in a great place, in a great building, and everyone wants to come check out Storks Plow's new building. And, you know, you're in a great location too with just think about, you know, drivability from the East Coast, you know, thousands of contractors, tens of thousands of snow contractors within driving distance. That event's hosted obviously by Storks Plows, but also the platinum sponsor of that event is Western. So we're excited about that. You said something to me that was really interesting at this year's ops management event. You know, you and I were talking, and most of our sponsors, when they attend a Snow Fighters event, they're they want to be there, but they really have other things going on. So they're kind of in and out. They hang out in the back of the room. And so we typically set up a space for sponsors to be in the back of the room, and they're just kind of observing and they're listening to the conversations, but they're also checking email and they're outside on the phone and what they're wandering. And you said something that was really interesting. You're the only person that ever said, you know, next time I want to be at a table. I want to be sitting here as an attendee. I want to be engaged in the full program. I don't want to just be sitting back here observing. I thought that was so cool. What was behind that?
Yeah. I mean, my reason to be there is to get to know the customer better. I mean, we want to be able to serve our customers the best we can. And the only way I can do that is by understanding their side. So I wished I could have sat at the table, and hopefully this next one I can do that and hear, be part of the conversations. And you know, for me, also part of going is the connections. I love connecting with people and hearing their story and finding out, you know, how they tie into this industry.
Well, and Snow Fighters is a great opportunity for snow contractors to get some inside connections and inside information. You know, being able to, you know, go visit a place like Storks Plows and see what's behind the scenes and meet you and meet your family and the team. And that's just so invaluable. You know, this is our livelihood. This is what we do. And to be able to make those connections and to be on site and to have a couple days of great education and networking and just all the learning and, you know, kind of collaboration that goes on at these events. I'm really excited. So again, September 11th and 12th at Storks Plows in Pennsylvania. What's the town? Leesport.
Yeah, Leesport is our town, but we're a few minutes from Reading. People generally have heard of that.
Reading's a bigger town, sure. Absolutely. Yeah. And then you also have something that I think is super cool. And I saw a lot of this on social media when it was happening, but you had your first Snow Alliance event. Tell us a little bit about Snow Alliance.
Yeah, so last year at our open house, I've always been very hands-on in the business, running for, you know, helping the customer, running and grabbing parts, you know, putting parts on the shelf. I love organizing things. So I've always been very involved in every piece of that stuff. But I realized before our open house that I'm always running and I never get to talk to people. And I have a desire to connect, like I said, and to know our customers. So this last one, I realized it's kind of interesting because we have a team in the office that normally does this, but for some reason at our open house, we would always go backwards and do it the way we used to do it, which was me dealing with all the customers when we were very small scale. But I don't do that anymore. I'm not answering the phones or dealing with walk-in customers. We have employees that have team members that have learned that whole process and they can help them just as good as I used to. So right the week before our open house, I told them, you guys are doing your normal job at the open house. Like, I want you out, you know, face to face with the customers. There's no reason that I'm doing that. And I want to connect with our customers, get an opportunity to sit down with them and find out what they need, what they want, and how we can help them better as a business. So those 2 days I focused on that, and a couple of my regular customers that I got to sit down with, I realized they were like, I want to connect with others in this industry. I want to, you know, be able to know what others are doing and just get to know people better and hear their story. And I went home and I did a brain dump in the shower and just thinking through it. And I thought, man, this is something that I want. I want to connect with others. And I am in a unique position that I know the suppliers of snow and ice equipment. I know a huge amount of customers on the East Coast here. And we now just bought a building that could host something like this. I would have never even dreamed of it before because we filled every square inch of our old building. There wasn't place for 10 people to stand in the office, let alone an event with 125 people. So I just started thinking of these ideas, and from what I came up with that night to what really happened were two completely different things, but it was awesome. We basically, my focus initially was to try to bring local guys together to have conversation and, you know, kind of in a small group, sit around and say, what's your biggest struggle right now? And then see if we could help each other, you know, from peer to peer, from us to our customers, whatever, whoever can help, just kind of share advice or how you got through a struggle. And it ended up being people from all over. There was a guy from Canada. There were lots of people from the West Coast. It was people flying in for Snow Alliance. We had Jordan Smith from VSI as our headlining speaker, and we focused the day towards brine. Mm-hmm. My idea was to kind of have a theme of every Snow Alliance, and brine was the first one because obviously it's a huge topic and people have a lot of questions and, you know, don't know where to start. So that's where we focus this event. Our next event, which we're planning, I didn't pick a date yet, but it should be in April of 2024, and it will be more broad. We had done basically from noon till, or 2 o'clock till 10 p.m., I believe was our hours of the last Snow Alliance. This one, we're going to do a full day, and it's going to be more a la carte. So you can kind of choose what class you want to jump in on and be able to buy your ticket that way versus a one full event pass. But we did a real nice catered dinner. We basically went all out on the event, and it was awesome. Our team, in the beginning, we were asking them to volunteer for basically a free pass to get dinner and everything, and we were going to have them work like 2-hour shifts. It ended up that they all worked the entire day because we didn't realize how much work it was going to be, and they went above and beyond. And just everyone was awesome. So in the end, you know, we paid them. But the coolest part was that our whole team came and worked extremely hard the whole day without expecting anything. And we were able to, you know, bless them in the end. And it was just an awesome experience. It was a big team building thing. I mean, everyone felt really good about what happened. I really look forward to the next one and improving it. We got nothing but positive feedback from the people that were there. And I know quite a few people that met there that are still in contact, and they're, you know, became friends just by having a place to get together. So,
yeah, the pictures and the comments I saw on social media after last April's event, the first one, were just phenomenal. I mean, yep, the size of it and just the comments and things. And we've had the same experience with Snow Fighters. People connect there and then they develop relationships. They go meet each other. They go to each other's shops. They get to know each other. They just, these natural peer-to-peer relationships form. And it's so cool. So, yeah, thanks for telling us about that. So follow Storks Plows on social media or get on that newsletter so you don't miss this opportunity that's going to come up. When do you think you'll have dates finalized?
I need to get on that. So I'm hoping soon. I mean, we didn't even start planning that event until January. So we planned it, our first event, from January to April 15th and pulled it off. So I'm not sweating it yet, but I know that I need to lock stuff in so that we can get everything lined up and people can get it on their schedule.
Well, thanks for sharing that. There's a couple other topics I want to get to quick. We're going to kind of go speed rapid fire here because, I'm looking at the clock and I don't want to go too long here on this podcast, but I'm really interested, you know, as in my consulting work, you know, I'm helping companies with succession planning and, you know, handoffs between one generation to the next generation or sell. And so I'm really interested to hear some of your thoughts about, you know, growing up in a family business and kind of how were you always expected to be part of the business? It sounds like you've always enjoyed it and just were always just kind of in it. But did you feel like that was an obligation, or were you just like really, was your heart in it like from the beginning? Maybe that, let's start there.
Yeah. So I pretty much always loved it. Our house was attached to the shop. So when we bought the shop, we had to sell the house we lived in, and there was a very rough house basically attached to the shop. And, you know, snow used to blow in the cracks in my windows. It was rough when we moved in there. So I would get off the bus every day and be at home and at the shop at the same time. So as a kid, I couldn't wait to get off the bus on the way home, and I would run into the shop and I'd see if we bought a vehicle. Cause if we bought a vehicle, I'd, you know, dig through it and try to find quarters under the seats or whatever. As a young kid, I love that stuff. But as I got a little older, then yeah, I had my own vehicles. When I was 12, I bought a Jeep and I started renting one bay of a garage we had out back, and started, you know, my own projects, rebuilding a Jeep motor and some different things like that. So yeah, so I have always loved being there and getting dirty.
Mm-hmm. 12 years old.
Yep.
Rebuilding engines.
I did my first motor then. I mean, my dad helped me a lot. He came out and wasn't happy with me one time because I took it further apart than I should have. I mean, I painted every single bolt and, you know, redid this whole thing, but I had taken apart like the oil pump and stuff that you shouldn't actually disassemble. But
yeah,
live but it learn. Worked out. I drove it in the end.
Now, are your parents still involved in the business?
Yes. So my dad and I are partners in the business. So he is still here working with us. My mom is, she sold her shares to me a couple years ago, but she still is doing all our financial stuff from home. And she has her own side business that she's doing.
Mm-hmm.
But buy it, I can't afford it. You know, and my parents had, I'm not saying I built it by myself, because my parents had built an amazing foundation of honesty and, you know, taking care of the customer. So when I came in and implemented some of the stuff I did, like the website, you know, that it just blew up because there was already an amazing foundation.
Sure. Right.
But I also, you know, realized like if I wanted to buy into the business, was that a tough
it's point? Becoming more valuable, right? The price is going up.
So that, you know what, that was an interesting thing, because I didn't want to say, hey, I've been underpaid or undervalued through these years, but I feel I have. So we, you know, we had to wrestle through that conversation. And at this point, I still feel like there's not a lot of clarity in what the plan of it is and how it will go down. You know, as my dad and I both own part of the business, how that shift will happen over time. I'm not sure.
Yeah. Well, everything you're saying is very common. And so the last question I have for you in terms of the succession planning is, do you have any advice for someone who's kind of going through this? What have you learned so far that maybe you can pass along to someone else?
Yeah, my advice is definitely to have the conversation early, not have it in your head for several years before you bring it up, and that it's more of a issue to deal with. The sooner you can bring it up, the easier it is, because it gets harder the longer you wait and the more pieces are in it and everything. I really wish that I had, you know, thought of it or even known to think of it early on when I came back from Bible school. You know, I wish I could have approached him and said, hey, are you guys interested in, you know, selling me so I could be part of the business and come back into it? But it wasn't even my plan to stay there at that point. So it wasn't a thought, you know, I just worked and the business was growing and everything was good. It was, you know, when I realized, you know, maybe I do want to take over this business down the road, but now I'm like, how do I become a part owner or whatever and work into that?
Great advice. Start early. Get that conversation out there. Don't be afraid of it. Yeah. Well, the last thing I want to talk about here, just in the last few minutes that we have, is, you know, something involving culture, because, you know, in today's world, you know, to be an attractive employer and to be able to retain people, culture has never mattered more, in my opinion. Values matter. The kind of employer you're going to be, the kind of leader you are, the kind of person you are. And, you know, you guys are outspoken, faith-based company. And so yep. I'm just kind of curious about, you know, you talked about going to Bible school and things like that, but how does that play out in the company? And you know, what does that look like on with your employees or with your customers or in your culture?
Yeah. So I believe it definitely makes a difference. If you ask employees what it's like to be an employee, I think one thing they'd all agree with is there's a level of grace. You know, if someone is going through something, you know, they're all people here. They're not numbers. You know, we're still small enough that if someone's family is dealing with something and they need, you know, they can't be at work for a few weeks, the rest of us bust our butts to cover the gap they leave, because that's the right thing to do for that person. You know, the other thing I would say is we are not focused on money. The drive is that I'm always pushing to our team is, how do we improve the life of the customer? I believe money is a byproduct of taking care of people. And we're not doing it for that byproduct, but we have been doing well through the years because our focus is, how do we fill a need and how can we improve the life of a customer? And sometimes improving the life of a customer ends up in us taking a loss. But if that's your goal, we won, because, you know, we can spend half an hour on the phone with a customer and end up realizing all he needs is a $3 part. And we sell that to him and we ship it to him. We now have a customer for life. And we did the right thing, where it could be slightly tempting to sell them a $500 unit rather than a $3 part, because mm-hmm. we just spent half an hour on the phone with them. But we can, you know, if the real goal and the real drive is taking care of the customer, there's a different outcome. And that's, I think, what our entire team would feel here, is what makes us stand out.
Cool. I appreciate that very much. Well, anything else, Gene, you want to share with us before we wrap up?
No, I don't think so.
Well, again, I am really excited to come visit your place in September, and I'm just going to really encourage everyone to get over to snowfightersinstitute.com and get yourself registered for that event if that's something you want to attend, because it will sell out. We will turn people away. I know it's not till September, but the registration's open right now. And Gene, you're always welcome, of course, to attend our other Snowfighter events too. And if you can break away, and we'd love to have you pop in for a day or two for those.
Yeah, thank you.
So you might be able to show up there as well. And we'll look for more information about Snow Alliance in April of 2024. And I think we'll leave it at that. So again, Gene, thank you so much for sharing your story with us. And we just really appreciate your support of the industry and Snowfighters, and you're a blessing to the industry. So thank you again.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Snowfighters Institute podcast. If you enjoyed this podcast, become a subscriber today so you won't miss any future episodes. Don't forget, please check out our upcoming events at snowfightersinstitute.com.